ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We are reading today from the Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 5, Chapter 12, entitled Rahuguna Converses with Jad Bharat, Text 10. Evam Krisham Stula Mandur Brihadyat Asaccha Sajja Jivam Ajivam Anyat Dravya Svabhava Shaya Kala Karma Namna Jaya Vehi Kritam Dvitiyam. Translation: since this universe has no real ultimate existence, the things within it, shortness, differences, grossness, skinniness, smallness, bigness, result, cause, living symptoms, and materials are all imagined. They are all pots made of the same substance, earth, but they are named differently. The differences are characterized by the substance, nature, predisposition, time, and activity. You should know that all these are simply mechanical manifestations created by material nature. Purport, as Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The temporary manifestations and varieties within this material world are simply creations of material nature under various circumstances. Prakriti kriya manani gunaya karmani sarvashah. The actions and reactions carried out by the material nature are sometimes accepted as our scientific inventions. Therefore, we want to take credit for them and defy the existence of God. This is described in Bhagavad Gita 3.27, Ahankara Vimudhatva Kartaham Iti Manyate. Due to being covered by the illusory external energy, the living entity tries to take credit for the differentiated creations within the material world. Actually, all these are being created automatically by the material force set in motion by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the ultimate cause is the Supreme Person. As stated in Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. He is the cause of all causes, the ultimate cause. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya says, Evam Sarvam Tatha Prakrutavai Kalpitam Vishnor Anyat. Evam Prakrityadhara Swayam Ananyadharo Vishnur Eva. Ataha Sarva Shabdas Chatasmin Eva. Actually, the original cause is Lord Vishnu. But out of ignorance, people think that matter is the cause of everything. Raja Goptashrayo Bhumi Sharanam Cheti Laukikaha Vyavaharo Natat Satyam Tayor Brahmashrayo Vibhu. Things are contemplated on the ephemeral or external platform, but actually this is not the truth. The actual protector and shelter of everyone is Brahman, the Supreme, not the King. Goptri cha tasya prakritis, tasya Vishnu Swayam Prabhu, tava Goptri tu prithivi, natvam gopta kshita chite smita, ata sarvat Rashais Chaiva Goptacha Harir Ishvara Sarva Shabda Videyascha Shabda Vritir Hi Karanam Sarvanantara Sarva Bahi Eka Eva Janardana. The actual protectress is the material nature, but Vishnu is her Lord. He is the Lord of everything. Lord Janardhan is the director both externally and internally. He is the cause of the function of words and what is expressed in all sound. Shiraso dharayata yadvad grivayas tadvad evatu ashrayatvam cha goptratvam anyesham upacharataha. Lord Vishnu is the resting place of the entire creation. Brahmano hi pratishthanam. Bhagavad Gita 14.27. On Brahman everything is resting. All the universes are resting on the Brahma Jyoti, and all the planets are resting on the universal atmosphere. In each and every planet there are oceans, hills, states and kingdoms. And each planet is giving shelter to so many living entities. They are all standing on the earth of feet and legs, torso and shoulders. But actually, everything is resting ultimately on the potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, He is known ultimately as Sarvakarana Karanam, the cause of all causes. So in continuation of the wisdom that Jad Bharat is giving to Maharaj Rahuguna, who in a very humble state of mind has now understood his offensive mentality, and he is inquiring more and more about the nature of spiritual wisdom. So Jad Bharat is now here, he talks about the greatness of the material creation and that everything emanates from the Lord. But when we see this, as Prabhupada has mentioned in the purport, we are also seeing our own imperfections, and that is really the difference between how a devotee tries to see and how a person who does not believe in the supremacy of the Lord, how he sees. The devotee will see that we see our own imperfections and our limitations. Senses are limited. We cannot understand the or fathom so many things. In fact, most things would be unfathomable. A little bit of material science is understood and we think that everything is controlled. And there are so many examples. I mean, if you look at the Shastras, tell us that there are 8.4 million species, but of which 900,000 species are waterborne, aquatic species. Now, if you were to just see how many fishes or crocodiles or sharks we may have seen, we can count on the number of on the fingers of our hand. Or maybe someone who was specialized in his whole life may have seen some more. But when we talk of 900,000 species, I mean, it is either we do not have Krishna in the center of our lives and therefore we would not accept the Vedic infallible wisdom, or we have our own world. There is no in between. So, we can see that the imperfections abound in even the greatest creations, the material creations. For instance, we take a telescope. The telescope is one of the more powerful creations in the last century, but then it is also has imperfections because it has limitations of what it can be, what you can see through that. And it is made by people like you and me who are also imperfect. So an imperfect person making an imperfect machine, how can you have perfect knowledge? So there are many examples which can tell us that we do not know, we do not know so many things, and that the source of knowledge has to be the Vedic understanding which is descending from the top. But we are in the mood of enjoyment, so we think we are enjoying. Actually, we may be suffering, but also then we think we are enjoying. See, we have our own goals that after a certain time we would like to acquire certain material assets and a car and a house and a bank balance, and that becomes our major effort. But then even the process of doing that is actually one with a lot of suffering. But we are like the camel who, when it's eating the thorns and is actually drinking its own blood, thinks that that is the sweetness of life. So the labor of the effort, even of acquiring these, is also fraught with tensions. So even from a material point of view, we can see there's so much stress. But nevertheless, because we are so much enamored by the goal, that we confuse we brainwash ourselves into thinking that this is our happiness, which actually is misery. And This illusion is really what is confusing and really creating the problems for us, because then we see everything in that light. For instance, if somebody is also wanting to make a profit, a material profit, and that is the major goal, if you see what ultimately he sees, like, my bank balance has swelled by, say, 100,000 rupees or 1 million rupees. Now, really, ultimately, that is a piece of paper. Ultimately, what is the difference between that piece of paper and a piece of paper where we have scribbled something, a child has scribbled something, and you will throw it in the waste basket? The difference is only that we have created what we call a currency, which then, by trading it, gives value, and you can acquire something. So, it is really, ultimately, it is a piece of paper, but the value has been given because the material laws, the way we have concocted the way the governance should be, therefore it adds value, and then that is with some people, many people don't have, and then the entire diversion takes place. So we have printed the paper, we have put somebody's stamp on it, and then we give value to it, and then that becomes the object which we chase after. So, in the ultimate analysis, and this is only a recent phenomena, so if you see over centuries and millenniums, I mean, people have survived and lived and prospered. In fact, they have done even better. How have they done? They didn't need this. This is only a temporary creation. So they have, the essence is what we need for survival. Physical survival is not really what has been a recent creation. But because our lifespan is so small and our thinking is also so stunted, that we see this as a permanent thing which has always been there and which will always remain there. So we cannot see beyond our own limitations. Prahlad Maharaj actually tells Hiranyakashipu, his father, when his father is asking him, what have you learnt in school? So he says that, oh, best of the demons, you are asking me what I have learnt. So I am telling you that I have learnt that those who come to this material world, those who accept this material world, are full of anxieties. And all living entities are full of anxieties. It's not just the human beings. We can see that even the ant, when it is going on the ground, if you put an object, if you put your foot in front, immediately it will divert. There are birds on the trees, and even a person approaches, let alone even making a noise, immediately they will fly away. You throw some grains to the bird will come and eat, but the minute it will first see whether anybody is coming to kill me or to catch me. So there is a tremendous anxiety in every living entity. So it is the nature of the material world that we can only get out of this when we turn towards the source of happiness, and that is Krishna. It has been very nicely described in our shastras that this material world is like a prison house. Actually, Durga, the meaning of Durga is prison house. But this is a very unique prison house, because this prison house does not have any walls, it doesn't have any guards, any lights, any barbed wire fences. But we are chained by an invisible chain, which we cannot see by senses. And the chain is really the material attachment, what we say kam, that binds us to the attachments, and we do not want to leave it. Actually, the only way we can actually come out of this is if Krishna comes and opens the door and says, come. Because He has created the material world, and that is because of our desire separate from Him. But we are so enamored by this world that even when Krishna opens the door, we said, no, I am busy, I have my own life, I cannot come. So, it's very nicely described in one of the lectures that we are actually breaking rocks, and Krishna or His representative comes and says that, why don't you come, you are free. He says, no, no, I have got my responsibilities, I have got my occupation, I've got this, I've got that. How can I leave? So, because we have our own concocted version of how things operate and we do not want to leave that. We want to cling to it. And therefore, we cannot actually hear. And that is why they say Shravanam is the first step. Because when we really listen, listen not only from our ears but from our heart and from our mind, then we really see the wisdom. So, this concoction that we have has to really go in order for us to turn towards the real source of happiness and the understanding who is the real controller. When Krishna says, Maya Dakshina Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam Hetunanena Kaunteya Jagat Vipari Vartate, we cannot actually accept that somebody is the controller. Or even if we accept, it is a concept. It's that maybe. Not reality that there is a person and then there is a whole organization or a supervision, this perfectly supervised thing for the not only this universe but millions of universes and everything is in order. It's very difficult because we are relying on our own senses. So, there are two services which Maya cannot defeat. Service to the Vaishnavas and the holy name. And therefore, Maya, she tries to divert our attention from this service. And to the extent that our attachments are there, to the extent that we actually cling on to that extent our service attitude is spoiled. Everybody has a nature to serve. And initially, even before we have understood about the spiritual wisdom, we would be still serving either senses or our family or the country, whatever. And now we will substitute it to some extent by service. We take up some services, but then that is mixed and then that desires are two ways. We sometimes serve our senses, sometimes we are serving the Vaishnavas and serving our Guru Maharaj, following the instructions. So this attitude to serve can increase to the extent we are reducing our attachments. And that is what Maya will always do to divert our attention. And to the extent that we are servant of the Vaishnavas, to that extent we are protected. To the extent that we want to be the Lord of the Vaishnavas, to that extent we would be affected. And we would be controlled. So therefore we have to be very cautious. And the example is given of that Maya is like water, that just like water can find any crack. You have, if you have a container which is completely covered also, but if there's even one crack, then the water which is there will start dripping and going out. So even one crack is enough. Well, our consciousness is full of cracks. So it is not without reason that we say that we are cracked. Too many cracks are there and then that allows it is very porous. So, if we are unified in this humble attitude in the service of the Vaishnavas, in the real sense that we surrender to that, and if you gradually develop detachment, to that extent our consciousness to the higher platform will increase. And we come closer to the spiritual understanding. And of course, to the extent that our attachment remains, then our consciousness is not only spoiled, but then Maya can use us to spoil others' consciousness. Even as devotees, we may be having some interest, but if we allow ourselves to be misused, then we will actually be instruments to spoil other people's consciousness also. For instance, Indradev is a great example given because he is a great devotee also and a very powerful demigod, the most powerful demigod. But nevertheless, because he could not tolerate the small child, Krishna as a child, when he induced all his family members and Vrajvasis to worship Govardhan rather than Indra, he felt extremely humiliated. And in that humiliation, because his prestige was stolen away, and because he had achieved so much prestige that for him it was, as they say, that for someone who's achieved a lot of honor, dishonor is worse than death. So he had achieved incalculable honor and prestige, and then when that was removed, he felt completely humiliated, and then that went, he reacted very violently, called the Samvartaka clouds, and then tried to do as much damage as he could. So we could see that the false pride is really very overpowering, and when it is not satisfied, it can really destroy our bhakti seed. So what is the path of bhakti then? And Rupa Goswami very nicely explains very simply that the path of bhakti is by which karma and jnana is kicked out. Because most people initially are, even if they have some desire or understanding of piety, even in India, would then follow the path of karma, thinking that, and karma means, as a karma yogi, thinking that we would just do good activities, good acquire good karma, we then have wealth and reputation and so on. So we want to include that, and ultimately we would go to Swargalok, where the opulences are unlimited. Or if those among the few who have genuine interest and they are jnanis and they are following path of meditation, or they are doing a lot of tapasya also, even if they are sincerely following that, they would go up to the level of, let's say, the among the seven planetary systems, upper planetary systems and seven lower, then we have Bhulok, which is our lok, then Bhuvarlok, the Tapalok, Janalok, Mahalok, Satyalok. The highest is Satyalok, which is this Brahmalok in the material existence. So those who are jnanis would at the most would achieve or go up to the desire to go to Janalok, Tapalok, like that. But even they cannot transcend the spiritual, go into the spiritual world. See, between the material world and the spiritual world, there is an area of neutrality, the Viraj River, which is like a river actually. It's like, it's the border which is the separating the material and the spiritual worlds, the material and the spiritual energies. That is the Tatastha Shakti. So, even only those who have actually having the desire for impersonal, merging into the impersonal Brahman, and even if they perfected that and they want to attain liberation, they cross that, and at the most they can go to the Brahma Jyoti. And the Brahma Jyoti, it comes in the spiritual world, but it is in the lower part of the spiritual world. And so that is the limit that to which they can go. But the upper part, that is the Paravyoma, is where the innumerable Vaikuntha planets are there. So there are limitations that we've seen of the Karmis and the Jnanis. In the Paravyomas also, in the upper planetary system, upper spiritual world rather, the Shivlok is the starting point where the Sadashiv, the expansion of Narayan, he resides. Then there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets where the various manifestations of Lord Narayan stay. Then Ayodhya, where Lord Ram permanently resides. And then comes Golok, and in which Dwarka first, above that is Mathura, above that is finally Vrindavan, the sweetest abode. So, the real bhakti follower, he actually kicks out all these processes. A genuine person does not desire or look at any of these processes and also these goals. So, as we've seen in our parampara, there's the great acharyas, their only motto was to be the servant of the servant and to be willing to accept that. There was no other desire, just to please the Vaishnavas. So there is a very nice example that has been given by His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj in one of his lectures, the example of the magnet. This is to show how what attracts Krishna, and how the scientific principle in the magnet is that the magnet attracts objects. So generally the scientific principle is that the positive repulses the positive, and opposite poles attract. So therefore the Krishna is the most positive, supreme, most energy, and therefore to attract Krishna, if one who has to the degree that we are humble, or to the degree that we accept the lower position, to the degree we enter the negative domain to say that I am nothing, to that extent Krishna is attracted. The supreme most positive is attracted by the genuine attitude of humility. And to the extent that we think we are something, to that extent Krishna withdraws. So really it is our own attitude and understanding of who we are and how we live by that, those principles. So this also describes the ascending and the descending process, because in the ascending process of knowledge, we generally want to understand ourselves. We say, I am the learner, I am great, I am doing this, I will understand Krishna. It is my own internal abilities that I can go through. That means we are relying on our own efforts, and we want to reach from where we are upward. But actually, in the devotee understands that the descending process, that means coming from Krishna, and if our own crucible is or our platform is worthy of accepting the mercy, then Krishna will come there. So it is said that to the extent that we are humble, or to the extent that we really know our infinitesimal position, to that extent the high descends into the low. Krishna will descend into the heart of the Vaishnavas. In today's world, the difficulty is that to accept that there is supervision as far as the world is concerned, the ruling, the governance of the world, that there is a creator and that there is an order, a certain method, is very difficult to accept, because we cannot see and we are relying only on our senses, as we discussed before. So the concept of God and then having various demigods, and those who are actually controlling the wind and the sun, sun god, moon god, rain god, this is considered primitive, or considered very archaic and unbelievable. But actually, if you really see that, even from the material examples, that what we just see from our own eyes, we do not, we accept that there is a method and there is an order. For instance, you read in the newspapers that in the United Nations, that USA votes for war to Iraq, for instance. Now, USA is a country. The whole country, with all its mountains, rivers and dams, is not voting. What we understand is that the one person is authorized to vote. Or Russia has voted no, doesn't mean that the continent of Russia or the country of Russia has actually physically voted. Even a child would understand that that is what is meant. Similarly, when we talk of any substitute like this, that somebody's one big company has swallowed another company. In the corporate world, you read that a corporation has swallowed another corporation. You do not. It's not that one corporation, they have actually swallowed the computers and the building and the people. Obviously, it is not understood. It is understood that somebody representing the corporation has been authorized, and he has undertaken the executive authority on their behalf. So this is so basic and logical. In the same way, here the authorities and the power is distributed. And we may not see it. It is not in our vision and material understanding also. But then we can see from a simple logic that there has to be some. So if we can see from just simple examples in the material world, then why is it difficult to understand that there are 33 million demigods and each one has, they are administered by Lord Brahma, who is ultimately administered by Lord Narayan. Why is it difficult to understand that? Just because we do not see it. And the reason is that because to personalize the existence of the Lord really threatens our own material desires. See, if you see that there is a mechanism and also a method by which there is a systematic depersonalization of everything, because it actually benefits us to, it is more convenient to our exploitative mentality and our consciousness not to feel guilty about sinful activities. So, which makes it very convenient not to have this somebody as a person overlooking us. It's like even in an exam hall, you are writing your exams and there's a person supervising you. Why is that person there? To see that, you know, you follow certain rules and you act within that. It's simple, because it has happened so often, probably even more so now, that the supervisor is not there even for 2 minutes and we can see what happens. Everybody is going out of control. So therefore the control is necessary, and there is a reason. So therefore this acceptance of this is that the personal supervision is not only necessary, but it is the way the world has been created and maintained. But and a devotee, if he has an understanding that yes, this is my I'm grateful for that, and we are happy to live within those laws, will have no difficulty in accepting those that supervision. But if we have ulterior motives, if we have our intentions to live our own separate desires and follow those, then this becomes a hindrance to have a concept of personal supervision. There's some examples which can illustrate that. For instance, take the case of abortion, how they've depersonalized it, just so that it doesn't over time, then people become desensitized. When a person actually goes to the abortion clinic and says that the clinic does not say that, oh, you have a child in your womb and we are going to murder the child or kill the child. The word used is that we will remove the excess tissue. And that is the prevalent norm. We will remove the excess tissue. So, you do not feel guilty, you do not feel that you have done something wrong, and okay, this is an inconvenience. And why? Because on the other hand, they have ushered in the sexual revolution. We have had the French Revolution, the Industrial Revolution, various revolutions, now the sexual revolution. What is the sexual revolution? That you can do what you want, just follow your instinct. In other words, you can be animalistic to the extent you want. Now they have even legalized gay marriages. So we can see how perverted the world can be if we just follow our own senses. If we let loose our senses, if there's no restraint, then it can really create havoc. And we would be in a world of illusions. So therefore, it becomes convenient for us to just move it out. Even in our Radha Gopinath temple, for instance, a small temple like this, there is an order, there is a system, there are people in charge of various departments and functions. So it is logical that as we go up the higher responsibility, and what to speak of governing the entire world and then the universes and millions of them, there has to be an order and there has to be a controller. So this depersonalization is a systematic effort to make us feel guilty, and that we can carry on the way we want to. Even the theory of evolution, for instance, I mean, that is propagated also so that we do not necessarily see the control and the supremacy of the Lord and his personalities, people who are helping him. Even our entertainment, even how systematically do it from childhood. Now we may look at science fiction in something where, okay, they may not even be grossly showing some things which we would normally not want. I mean, we may condone it and say that it is not showing some gross violations. But actually, the purpose of these, if you see, the 30-40 years that is really taken off in entertainment, you have the Superman and Batman and Spider-Man, you have the Star Wars, and what is actually it is doing is that it is propagating the supremacy of the human being. They will have a concept of good versus evil. So they instill, so then you feel, yes, oh, they're showing good and then they're showing evil. But ultimately that good is their version of the good, where there is no place, there's no need for God. God doesn't exist in that, there is no mention, there is no reference. And the good means the final control. The person who brings the good, the person who restores order, the person who brings sanity, the person who solves all problems, is ultimately a human being, but a supreme human being. So that way we get to feel that our own powers, our own mastery that is there, and that someone like us, but better, is already there, and we could also become like that. So it is a very, very sinister way of actually taking us in a very, very subtle way from the concept that there is actually, that we are always servants and that there is a higher power. And before we see, and then we may actually go through entire science fiction and not see any explicit sexual scene. So you may say, oh, it doesn't have such a bad thing. Or it doesn't have, of course it has a lot of violence, but it may not have some other gross scenes. So we get lulled into feeling that actually it's not bad. I mean, it is just an entertainment. Temporary escape. But the danger we see, especially for children, because they don't understand, is that gradually this induces us to move away from the concept of the supreme control of the Lord and our role as a servant and what is the real world. And we move into a world of make-believe, which is not just a temporary thing, because gradually that plays on our senses, it whets our appetite, and our taste develops, and then that our beliefs come from that. And then we also feel, yes, so many people will believe. Today it is amazing. You cannot imagine that if a movie, typically a movie like this, some science fiction which is made by a very big director, in 3 days, they usually time this opening on a weekend, which is a holiday, either Thanksgiving or some Labor Day weekend or something, usually in June, July, in the summer months. In 1 weekend, in just 1 weekend, it's shown in about 5,000-6,000 theaters in the US, and in one movie in America alone, they gross $140 million. 600 crores in 1 weekend, Friday to Sunday. 1 weekend. And what to speak of in the course of the whole year. So you can see the popularity. Here we have queues for basic things like getting a ticket to on the railway platform. There that, in America, there is never any queues. People would feel it is below the dignity to stand in queues. But for movies, they have serpentine queues which are up to a mile long. And the tickets are so costly. So the idea is that how much excitement there is. People are waiting it for months. So this is a sign to see then how the mentality is moved and people actually believe in it. And these are the real heroes. Ultimately, they are all fallible people who are just like us, and having no control of themselves. I believe the person who magnified and signified the Superman, I forget his name, but he had some disease and he had an accident, and then he died very young. So we don't need any proof to really see that how weak we are, but nevertheless this gives us a completely different impression. So then what to speak from there if someone then comes and says that we have demigods and moon gods, and then people will laugh and say, what nonsense, we do not see, we cannot, why should we believe about a wind god or somebody who's controlling that? If you show, let me see it myself. So therefore we have to, we may all agree that yes, this mentality is there, but then we have to recognize the deeper the danger behind it. And a devotee generally goes to the source of everything. So the source of everything is Krishna, and we want to know who Krishna is. Otherwise, generally we will not look at the superficial external situation. We just take it for granted that the immediate creator or the manufacturer, or we may glorify someone who's made a wonderful watch, but it may cost maybe 50 lakh rupees, one watch. It is true, a watch can cost 50 lakhs. But then we do not even stop to think what is, who's made this, who's given the intelligence, who's made this person himself, and what is behind it. So devotee goes to the source of everything, and ultimately we find that for everything the source is Krishna himself. And this effort of depersonalization is so, because it is necessary for removing the concept of personalizing, is so prevalent that even, say, it is those who are traveling to the United States and the West, and those who have stayed there would know that there you are a social security number. You are not a name. You know, because it is easy to control and categorize a social security number. So everybody is known by a number. So basically, you cease to exist as a person in the eyes of all. It's just, you are a number. So you are a statistic. So there are very ways of the introduction of robots. Why? Because the robot is more efficient. He doesn't go on strike. He doesn't take holidays. He works overtime for free, no extra cost, and he does what you want basically. So the concept is that what for basic things in the farmland or in the factories, the gradually bringing in people who where you do not need people. The people are stopping. People stop seeing other people as people. Either just a number or the statistic or. Gradually bringing in robots. Then you stop thinking about the effect it has, even on a basic thing, even on a mundane, moralistic thing as to whether you're hurting someone or caring for someone, that exists. What to speak of understanding about his emotional or spiritual needs. And then therefore these various terms that come in. See, over time, we get lulled into feeling what we constantly read and hear about. So, today if you have the term fanatic, the fanatic is considered someone who, usually the term fanatic is for anybody who is very religious. You rarely find this, they may call some people terrorists, but primarily it is those who are, you don't call normally a gangster a fanatic. You will call someone who is taking on to religion. Now, they may be doing wrong things, but that is not the issue. There are crimes committed every moment all over the world. But gradually over time, the unsuspecting public generally starts feeling that the fanatic is someone who basically goes too much into religion. And therefore, the one who's considered very moderate, very balanced, is someone who does everything in moderation. That means there is only a certain room. He is in control of how much he should bring the Lord into his life. He is in control of that. But he is also in control of everything else. He is in control of his other parts of life and where there is no room. So he is the controller, and then he lets the entry at a certain time, maybe on Sundays or some day on his birthday or on a festival day when he goes for darshan. That is the entry time, and then there is an exit time. But he's the controller, he switches on and off. So primarily, that is the mood. You hear about, when we talked of abortion, people, those who are supporting it, they are not, they don't consider themselves that they are supporting murder. So they call themselves pro-choice. There is a pro-life and pro-choice. So every time you hear the reference of pro-choice means that they're glorifying the fact that each person in a democracy has the right to choose. We can do what we want. And because we're supporting, let me be the controller, let me be the decider, I know what is best for me. So I am either pro-choice, but pro-choice means anti-life. But that is not signified. It is always brought out as to what that I am doing something also for you. I am allowing you to choose for yourself. And why is it so prevalent? Because the establishment will also be indulging in various things which they need the support. So they're all sailing in the same boat. In fact, we all are sailing in the same boat to the extent that we do not recognize it and we do not understand that there are two different worlds. We are today in this world. We are affected by it also. And we are... But at least the minute we have this opening, understanding of the real world, then if we do not make every effort we can to pull ourselves out with the help of like-minded people and devotees and our superiors, and we know how. We have been given the whole manual of how we should do this, and initially it may be an austere thing, then that would be the greatest tragedy. After having been told what is the reality. So, I'd like to end by just using our Kaliya story as comparison to how we are. Like we know in the story of Kaliya that Krishna subdued him. He was, but before Krishna subdued him, Kaliya was very powerful. So we have to imagine ourselves in the mood of Kaliya, because Kaliya was, of course, really infinitesimal in front of Kaliya also, because he was so powerful in his energies that he had 1,000 hoods. Krishna danced on 1,000 hoods and subdued him. But before that, he was so arrogant. So the material nature is also very arrogant. So we are like Kaliya, and we, just like when Krishna slipped out of his coils, Kaliya was showing one after the other all his coils to try to catch Krishna. So our coils are our own various desires and our own so-called achievements. So as Krishna was raising one coil after another, we are raising our one hand on wealth, then we have this power, we have this popularity, we have this this particular knowledge, etc. So but then finally Krishna subdued Kaliya, he subdued all his coils. In the same way, we will also be subdued one way or the other, whether we understand it or not, whether we accept it or not. So better if we understand what our situation is and take it with an open heart, because then Krishna's mercy will flow immediately, which is available for everyone. So basically, as Jesus Christ had said, that we should live in this world but not of this world. So we are part of this world, we have to follow the norms, but then our consciousness within has to be of the real world, and understanding why we are here, how we are here. And as this verse has said, that the danger of taking credit, feeling that we are the controller, we are the doer, and there is no place for God. Because that is a starting point. As soon as we start with that premise, that there is no place for God, then there is no hope for us. Because we have completely stopped the initial level entry of hope for us, or the knowledge. Because everything, if we are seeking help from Krishna, then he will send his devotees to us. So therefore, this... while we are living in this world, the biggest danger is not to get carried away by our environment, and that we really seek, create an oasis of devotees who can help us, and find those areas where we can sustain our spiritual understanding. So, is there any questions, any comments? Yes. Yeah,
Thank you, Prabhu, for your very nice class. You were giving this very nice analogy of Kaliya and how it is that this propensity within ourselves for wealth, fame, adoration are just like the hoods of Kaliya, and just like how Kaliya was subdued by Krishna, over a period of time Krishna also subdues all this propensity within our heart. But my question is that when all these propensities are coming into our heart, at that point of time we don't realize it. It's a very gradual process, and finally when it manifests, then we have problems coming in our life in terms of Krishna subduing it. So how does one understand, or how does one take care that all these propensities, you know, much before it comes into our heart, it is either subdued or it is controlled?
The association of devotees is very necessary also, because we cannot know our own weaknesses. As you said, we would definitely get carried away, and then when we are in that mood, that's the least opportunity or least time that we would actually know our own weakness. So therefore we have to allow others. That's why the process is based on accepting a spiritual authority to whom we can go to. And we allow that person or his representatives to help us. So first is the mental understanding, and then is the realization based on action. So if you have been given the had the good fortune of coming in contact with devotees, we have an initial understanding, a little faith to start with, and now that has to be nurtured. And but in the process we all our poisons have to be first washed away by Krishna. So these poisons will come, and they may come more. Actually, Krishna will test us, and oftentimes we feel that after coming to the Krishna consciousness movement and we started the process in some way, that we find many of our anarthas are increasing. But then actually it is said that it is only the poisons which are already there and dormant is coming out. So we don't have the capacity to do that. But then at least we have put ourselves in someone's hand. It's like you're going for a major operation, and you just tell your family that, look, I don't know, when I'm coming out of it, I may be, in God knows in what kind of senses, I may speak anything, but I'm putting myself, you know, you in your hands, and you would expect them to take the decision for you. So likewise, this process of cleansing, when we are going through, when we put ourselves, the real association means surrender. So when we are accepting and seeking the association of devotees, which means we are accepting the process of sadhana bhakti, then we have to allow ourselves to for others to be able to help us. It's a process of helping each other, basically. So that little independence we have to whether we want to do or not, because then that would show our genuine desire, that if we are willing to make the effort, because nothing comes without sacrifice and austerity. So that that even the swallowing of pride, or allowing someone to correct us or tell us or show us the path, is the difference really. Otherwise, we would put it as a mechanical objective which we could have a certain formula to go to. But it is not that. It is battling our own internal weaknesses, and precisely for that we have to surrender.
Sorry, but just taking this example from Kaliya. Now, although Kaliya had the association of his wives and he was getting good advice, but somehow he was not able to accept that. So does it mean that a person who has this propensities of envy and all those in their heart, he has to have Krishna only coming and subduing? Yes.
Actually, the Kaliya's wives, the Nagpatnis, were great devotees, and their prayers were actually answered by Krishna. because they had very good motives for their husband. In spite of his arrogance and weaknesses, they were serving him. And when they prayed to Krishna sincerely, Krishna accepted those prayers. So actually that teaches us that that the prayers of the Vaishnavas and their mercy and kindness is really what will open, what will bring Krishna and Srimati Radharani to us. So that means what we are doing in our spiritual path is basically trying to please the Vaishnavas, genuinely. Not with the motive that if I please you and you are doing well spiritually, so someday you will look kindly upon me. Not with that motive, but just being grateful to be given the opportunity. So if we are serving them, and if we really please them, and especially by doing things which we do not like, but which are necessary, then their prayers will really make Krishna enter into the spiritual domain.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Prabhuji, in your class you mentioned that all these qualities that people have, and we appreciate these qualities, actually ultimately it is Krishna who, you know, gives them these qualities, and you know, these scientists and whoever create various kind of, you know, inventions. At the same time, how do we understand the impersonalists and even the people who commit crime? Ultimately even Krishna is giving them that intelligence. So how do we relate that and understand, you know, that the
Krishna difference? Is giving us the abilities, but ultimately we act on our desires. So the desire is in our control, that's based on our consciousness. So that is that minute independence, that what we want to do. So we can't say that Krishna made me kill someone. It was our desire to do it, or Krishna made me do this. You used your independence thinking to come today on a rainy day to the temple. It is your choice. You could be doing something else. So, the abilities are there. The potential is there. Therefore, we say that Krishna may give that to somebody who is a genius, someone is a great painter, someone is this, that, has various... These are all coming from him. And he may realize it, or someone has great character and great control, whatever. So these are all in there, and we may realize it to some extent. There is true that we have a lot of potential. But what we do, ultimately, the first step is based on our desire, and that is in our hands. What we want to do is whether we succumb to our senses and just do what we want to, or whether we go through the eyes of the Shastra and then dovetail our happiness in actually pleasing others. Because it's not that we don't want happiness. Of course, we are not masochists that we are wanting to be happy. But we understand the source of happiness, and we try our best to dovetail. And then through that we get happiness, which is unmotivated and which comes from pleasing others. And those others who are worthy of being pleased also, especially. Is that clear? He wanted to answer. Hare Krishna. Haan, theek hai.
भगवान कृष्ण ने तो कालिया का दमन कर दिया का और वृंदावन को मथुरा को मुक्त करवा दिया. हमारे अंदर जो क्रोध की कालिया चला हुआ है, जो सारे विश्व को विनाश की तरफ ले जा रहा है, तो क्या ऐसी भगवान कृष्ण कोई हर आदमी में पैदा होना पड़ेगा जो उस क्रोध को
सब में ये काम क्रोध लोभ मोह मत्स्य सब में है. ये हमारी वीकनेसेस है, तो उसके लिए ही भगवान के शरण में आने की जरूरत है. और भगवान हमें ये कैसे इसमें से निकलना है वो भी हमें समझाते हैं. जैसे कि भगवान का नाम लेना, भगवान के भक्तों के संग में रहना, तो वो हमें जो अगर हम वो नहीं मानेंगे और हम हमारे प्रवृत्तियां जो है वो हम चालू रखेंगे, तो हमें ये श्री राधा गोपीनाथ की जय, तो ये हमें हम ज्यादा क्रोधित होंगे और हमारी जो वीकनेसेस है वो भी ज्यादा बढ़ेगी. इसलिए उसे कैसे हमें उसका सामना करना है, वो भी हमें भगवान बताते हैं। इसलिए शास्त्रों की जरूरत है, भक्तों का संघ की जरूरत है, क्यों उनसे हम समझ सकते हैं। लेकिन वो समझने के लिए हमें एक उसकी शरणागति लेनी पड़ती है। अगर हमारे मूड होता है कि मैं सब जानता हूं और अभी थोड़ा कुछ ज्ञान बाकी है, मैं प्राप्त कर लूंगा आपके पास, तो कुछ नहीं, कृष्णा एंटर नहीं होंगे। लेकिन अगर हम आएंगे ऐसे मूड में कि मेरे पास कोई शक्ति नहीं है, मेरी ताकत नहीं है, और मुझे जानना है कि क्या करना है और मुझे मदद की जरूरत है, तो भगवान जरूर कोई ना कोई भक्त के थ्रू हमें ये मदद करेंगे। तो ये क्रोध तो सब में है, सो मेनी कितनी वीकनेसेस हमारे में है, लेकिन उस कैसे उसे निकलना, वही भक्ति का मार्ग है। मानते हैं
हरे कृष्णा प्रभु जी, व्हाट हैपेंस टू द लिविंग एंटिटी वंस ही रीचेस ब्रह्म ज्योति? डज ही फॉल डाउन अगेन बैक टू द मटेरियल वर्ल्ड? और
या व्हेन दोज आर सीकिंग इम्पर्सनल मर्जिंग विद द दैट आल्सो that only those who have actually perfected the art of liberation, not that just anyone who desires, so there'll be few, but even then ultimately they have to come back.
Means Krishna says that
but they cannot enter into the spiritual world of Golok.
That means if you even like you mentioned that between the material world and the spiritual world there is a shakti, and you cross that and reach Brahma Jyoti.
The marginal.
Yeah, that means there's a chance of coming back from the spiritual world if you're not perfected.
That is my understanding, but maybe Shyamananda Prabhu would like to enlighten us.
What exactly is he asking? That when you.
We have said that we enter the spiritual world, that Brahma Jyoti is the lowest part of the spiritual world. So when those who seek to merge and they merge into the Brahma Jyoti, then would they also ultimately come back into the material world, or they remain in the spiritual world but certainly they don't get entrance into Golok? So what would be their status? Would they come back into the material world?
It is described that anadrita yushmad angraya, those who do not show affection for the service of Krishna's lotus feet, they do fall back. So that danger is always there, and the danger is manifested in the sense of you get relief from material miseries. You have no birth, no death, no old age, no disease. But as a soul, part and parcel of Krishna, you're always seeking out relationships. So that propensity is not fulfilled. And maybe today or maybe after a million of eons, if that thing comes up, till the time you are satisfied with negation, that is, I am just not suffering and I am happy with that. But the moment you need some positive activity, and because of having no understanding and no access to anything higher, you have to seek it out lower. So that's how it happens. The moment you need some relationship, then you are sent back to the material world.
So it's a matter of time, eventually you will come down.
Yes.
Thank you. Any other questions? Vishwanu Prabhu.
You very nicely pointed out the dangers of depersonalization, which we see in the material world. And in Krishna consciousness, everything is personal. So is there any danger of our also thinking in terms of statistics, number of temples, number of devotees, so on and so forth? And is there any, do you foresee any such danger where we also get into this mode of depersonalization because of sheer numbers, sheer statistics?
Yeah, you're asking the wrong person, I think, because it is definitely the danger would be there, the propensity to because we bring our own backgrounds into even when we come to seeking spiritual knowledge, and that is why, as at least in this temple we know, and I think, and that's what Prabhupada wanted, is then probably other temples also, but that the spiritual quest has to be uppermost. So whatever has to be done in a reasonably efficient way, we do. But we do not dwell too much on those issues, on management issues. So there is an importance of the balance to be preserved. And that is why the significance of the position of, even in the spiritual hierarchy, when we have GBCs or they're really not into the day-to-day management, is precisely also to see the that we do not lose track, that ultimately we are here for together seeking Krishna's mercy and following the path. We are together in that whole process of sadhana bhakti. So yes, the danger would be there, and many religious organizations are extremely efficiently maintained, but they are empty inside, because they have really, there's no significance left, or they have totally diverted and they are on a wrong path. And traces of that also have been in our organization, lots of it in past. But I think that we are in good hands, because ISKCON is putting a lot of emphasis on the real essence that Prabhupada said. That is why, in fact, Prabhupada had himself stated that the vision that he had was that in such a worldwide movement of over 400 temples, farmhouses, etc., would, and all decentralized, so they are managed on local levels by and large. And for having a coordinated effort all over the world, he only said 2 weeks out of the whole year they should meet together to discuss. And he kind of put it as an order. So therefore, that shows that the effort is in preaching, in distributing the mercy, and thereby helping ourselves to come out, to come closer to the devotees and the Lord. And we don't get overcome by the our tendencies for seeing others only as that exploitative mentality, that we seek others to do, you know, so that we can do better. That we reduce others to just numbers. We have gone through various ups and downs also, and that this exploitative tendency is a human tendency. You know, we, even in our service, we might want to, we, if we have the tendency to show ourselves as doing well, then people who are assisting us, we will push them and exploit them to the extent we can. We may have the tendency to, so that ultimately we may justify it by saying that, well, we are putting all this at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, so everything is justified. But it is not that the ends justify the means. The means are also very important, and it would be devoid of any significance, really, if we do not take the basic principle. Because how do we reciprocate? I mean, how do we justify that? So the process is very, very important. That is why we hear constantly that there are devotees who are, now we have seen quite a few devotees who have departed from this world, and there are several who have been practically invisible to the eyes of most of the ISKCON. They may not have been leaders in the sense that they didn't have large responsibilities, but their glories have been extolled, and they are no less, maybe more, in the eyes of Krishna as devotees. Just by being steady and continuing this lifelong practice of doing their devotional service. So they may have no role to play in any kind of management or any, and they have just by sticking to their own service, that has been their glory. So these are reminders to us that actually the real essence is in the simple things. Simplicity is the greatest virtue, really. Any other questions? Granthra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.